Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moody, and we want that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday afternoon, and when I mean afternoon, I mean it's just a little past noon, which is, when I say afternoon, usually it's like late afternoon, yada, yada, yada. Life is going to get in the way tonight, and I was thinking about doing it tomorrow, but that will probably get in the way as well, whether it's stuff I got to do in my life or things that are going on in the city that, well, I think people know what I'm talking about. Anyway, sometimes life gets in the way, so I figure why not do an early show? Get this thing out of the way. We have a variety of items to speak upon, that is for sure. It's going to be all Jake Paul. That's it. We're going to go over about 15 different opponents. We'll start with Errol Spence. Just kidding. He's a cruiserweight, right? That's what Jake Paul is. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, we are going to talk about the weekend. What was a lot of people won't do it, but there is some crow to be had, and I'm not talking about the Jake Paul. I'm actually talking about the Fox card, and actually there's a little something wrong with my switchboard, so I'm kind of distracted for a second. Hold on, let me... Okay, I think we're good. So anyway, the PBC on Fox card was much better in the ring than it appeared to be outside of it, if that makes... Or inside, outside, on paper. That's what we're talking about, sorry. Oh, shoot. Okay, wow. All right, I'm going to get help. Anyway, it was a better card. We had an upset. We had an almost upset. We had competitive fights even in the co-feature. It was, it was interesting to watch. So, we're definitely going to start when it comes to recap. What the hell is going on? Okay. We're definitely going to start with recap like we do normally. I got a couple of comments last week saying I'm hating. I'm a hater. Because, you know, I didn't have a long breakdown in-depth segment on the Jake Paul event. I did talk about it. I've talked about him in general and what he's doing, yada, 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 a variety of times. So, I mean, as it turns out, I guess we didn't really have to have a breakdown of the fight because, I mean, you know, look what happened. But, yeah, there is a variety of things to get into. Like I said, Andre had a great start to a fight per usual, and then kind of, Williams had something to do with that, making it tough down the stretch. We'll talk a little bit about that. Like I said, the PBC on Fox, we'll talk minorly. I mean, the thing that stood out to me was the look of it. I like the look. We're talking about the Triller thing now. I like the look. I didn't see the whole card, but I like the look of the other card much better, like the way it was shot, the setup, and all that. I understand there was even more music, I believe, this time. I'm not sure about that, but I believe there was more music, and it was set up more for the music, which I understand that. But Oscar De La Hoya was a mess. I mean, this was really, really bad, and I know a lot of people sat back and enjoyed some of it. At the start, when you start hearing him talk, you know, you can tell he's just out of it. He's just saying all sorts of stuff. And, well, we'll get into it. We'll get into it a little bit. I just thought it was like, wow, pull his mic. He's over there saying, put me on the screen more, show my face more. And the thing about Oscar is he's on this tough guy mode now, dropping mics and tough guy, mean guy, hard-ass face. And it's just really cornball to me. He's a cornball. He's never really gone with the tough guy. He's usually the franchise player, right? They signed him. He's the face of the franchise. He's a nice guy. He respects the sport. I don't need to trash talk like Mayweather, blah, 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 all that stuff, right? But, you know, it was corny. It was corny. And, you know, somewhat sad, but I think, you know, more cornier. I mean, that was the definition of corny. And at some point, you know, when something's so bad it's funny, I get that. But in the sense, it's like, okay, now it's getting irritating. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where I was at after a while. It's like, wow, dude, this is like, I don't know. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. And then we are going to preview the weekend. And by the way, Showtime, they're not out of business. Yes, I guess it's the clearance sale. This is a hell of a way to go out, you know, on top, I guess. They're going to go out on top with a great schedule. I don't know. But, you know, it doesn't seem like they're out of business, folks. It really doesn't. I know a lot of people have been talking about that. First, it was Bob Arum, so that got spilled into the media and the fan base. And then, obviously, with DAZN, Eddie Hearn saying it. And here they are with right now the best schedule. We'll see, though, as it fills in, no doubt about it. There's plenty of fights to be made. And this year's been kind of funky. Like, for a hardcore fight fan, there's some good fights. March was a good month. The Zone really hooked us up that month and all that. But, you know, the name brand guys within the sport, three heavyweights, Wilder, Tyson Fury, and Joshua, no fight scheduled. Gervonta just got a fight scheduled yet. Spence, Crawford. People looking at what's Golovkin going to do. Like, there's just a variety of things that it's like a lot of wait and see. And so you can see the casual fan base. It's harder to activate them right now, like, you know, boxing did down the stretch of last year, the last few months. So it's been a funky year. If you look at the May schedule, there is some pretty damn good fights in there, some okay fights. But it is going to keep getting better and better as we get to it. And, you know, I'll just break down Triller as well a little bit. They're talking about some pay-per-view buys. Should we believe those pay-per-view buys? Either way, even if it's half the amount, it's still a lot of pay-per-view buys, you know what I mean? But, yeah, the way the media is responding to this, especially the paid media, is like, wow, okay, cool. But just keep that same energy. Keep that same consistency when you go to shit on a card. And, of course, we'll have current fight news and whatnot and a little bit of the boxing Twitter segment. It won't be that long of a show, just me today. I'm kind of having to do this because my schedule's getting rearranged a little bit today. Had to do some stuff and, like I said, some items going on. I hate to say item. Obviously, the jury's going to decide what's going to happen in this case here in Minneapolis and that type of stuff. So tomorrow I don't think I would be able to do a show. So anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk Ropadope and download the show directly there, or if you listen to the browser, cool. You don't have to do that, though. If you don't want to, you can find the show on Apple Podcasts, the Ropadope Radio podcast, on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, PlayerFM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. One more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contracts. Stream it anywhere, any device. The cloud DVR is available. And real quick, if you sign up for the choice package, That'll get you a free year of HBO Max, and for a limited time, I repeat, for a limited time, the NBA League Pass Premium for the rest of the season. Still got a month left. That's AT&T TV. Okay, let's get into this right off the bat. And like I said earlier, I'm going to get to the Jake Paul stuff, but I want to talk other boxing that happened too. A lot of part-time media members and paid media members and even plugged-in fans on boxing Twitter won't actually admit they were when they're wrong. Like, besides, like, in a big 50-50 fight and it could go either way, that's different. It was a great fight. I had it winning, but I had this guy winning, but it was a good fight. That's different. But, you know, the whole mode of boxing Twitter acting as if they are professional matchmakers, but they don't have to answer anything when it comes to that. They're not held responsible for that. You're not getting paid to be a professional matchmaker. And I find it funny when certain cards just go down as, well, that was a horrible card no matter what, because we said it was a horrible card. On paper, it was a horrible card, so it's a horrible card. Or, oh, they just got lucky. They just got lucky. You know, you see that a lot, too. Case in point, you know, the main event, Tony Harrison, Brian Perrella coming up. Brian Perrella from 147. He said he was having problems making 47. He did fight higher than 47. He did fight at junior middleweight at the beginning of his career. Then he took a little time off, and then all of a sudden he returned, and it was pretty much welterweight. So on the surface, you're like, how many good wins does this guy really have at welterweight? And then he's going against a 54-pounder. It does, on paper, it looked like a showcase knockout fight. Tony Harrison is a little vulnerable in spots, obviously. He's a very skillful fighter as well. But he had been out for a long time, and he'd also been out for a long time from a knockout in a fight which he did take some damage. So that's also part of it. You know, you could say, well, he was washed. Well, we always knew there's a potential guys come off knockouts knockouts and then a long layoff. And I believe he got COVID too. Obviously, his trainer passed, his father and stuff like that, and RIP to him, man. It's been a rough one for him, but it turned out to be a good card, like, all the way around. And even the middle fight, Omar Juarez, you know, Araujo actually, did he win many rounds? No, I had it about 8-2 or something like that. I think all three judges had it 99-91. But it was an entertaining fight. You could see Omar Juarez was kind of boxing on the edge of the pocket. Not all the way outside, but he was boxing well on the edge of the pocket. He was using his jab really well. I thought he had that good in-between distance. Jabs and hooks. And then you started to see Araujo pressure, you know, and get to the body and start landing looping shots and whatnot. And the fifth and sixth round, I thought, probably were some of his best rounds. But there was a good action fight, and you started to see Juarez kind of stay in the pocket more, landing to the head and body with both hands. He probably buzzed him in that, I think, seventh round. And even like in the ninth round, he stole the round, but a good action fight. You know, hooks and a right hand, and that one kind of did it. And then he kind of was more of a stick and move or land a clean punch and move or be outside of the pocket or some combinations. Either way, he won the fight clearly, Omar Juarez, but it was entertaining. You know, 226 to 142, that's a lot of punches landed. And, you know, really, Juarez, you know, landing 36% of his shots to 18. But it was an active fight. It was fun. And when you look at the opener, Vito Milonecki got beat by James Martin. I mean, Martin came out and won the first two rounds. He got off to good starts in those rounds. Milonecki at times may land better here and there, but there was this exchange. I think it was a left hook that he caught him in an exchange. Next thing, it was like on the tip of his nose. Next thing you know, Vito was bleeding from the nose. I did think Vito kind of balanced himself out in the third, in the fifth, in the sixth. The fourth was a very competitive round. Martin would have, like, moments, but he just, I don't think he was doing as good. But then he closed really well. I gave him the seventh and the eighth for sure. You know, those uppercuts, several really hard hooks. It seemed like Vito was just, I don't know. I don't know if he was listening to his coach that much. Sometimes he was boxing really well. Other times it looked like he was trying to load up and counter. He's a youngster. He is a young guy. So we'll see where he goes from here. But I had it 5-3 for Martin. It could have been a draw or 4-3-1 Martin. There was one scorecard that had it 76-76, and two of them had it 77-75. But once again, you know, an upset. definitely an upset. So that was better than expected, and we'll see. Like I said, Vito's very young, and, you know, he's been somewhat aggressive, not aggressive in his interviews, but the way he's been talking about what he sees for himself and all that, I think he's been pretty aggressive that way. So we're just going to see where he goes, and they're probably going to slow roll him and build him more now, put him on FS1 and whatnot. We had an upset, you know. We had an upset, and kudos to James Martin. And we almost had an upset. Some people think Perilla did do enough. I mean, if I had to pick a winner, it probably is Perilla. I had it a draw or 7-5. It was pretty back and forth, I'd say, through the first four rounds. I had it 2-2. Perilla was putting in really good body work. He was circling with his jab. Like, for instance, in the third round, he closed stronger. So I had Harrison win the first round, but then I had Perilla win in the first round. No, I had Harrison, Perilla win the third. The fourth was close. Maybe Harrison, I'm not sure. That could have been Perilla, too. But then Perilla, for me, won the fifth and the sixth round. Close round, especially the seventh round. But I think it was like Harrison, Harrison in the sixth round, like early, I think, let me see my notes, 45 seconds into the round, he looked hurt. He definitely looked hurt. Now, he did recoup and land some good shots, but he looked buzzing that one. And like I said, close round in the seventh, I gave it to Perilla, but it was close. The eighth round could go to Perilla too, but it was not much happened. Not much happened in that round. Then Harrison, I thought, kind of got things going. He started landing his jab, started landing hard shots, maybe in the last minute of the 10th. So I gave the 9th and the 10th. But I had Perilla closing pretty strong. It seemed like he was coming out with that urgency after the 9th and 10th round. And he just landed the better of the two. Even the punch stats were really close, 150 to 138 in favor of Perilla. Perilla was more active, throwing 692. Harrison more accurate, 453, but landing 30% of his shots to 22. Like I said, 6-6, 7-5, Perilla. But it was a draw. 114-114 made it that way. One judge had it 9-3, and the other had it 8-4. One for Harrison and one for Perilla. But once again, we can sit there and say, well, they got lucky because, you know, Harrison was just washed. Well, you know, there was a potential that he could have been a little washed coming off a knockout in that long of a layoff. So I was entertained. Now, I'm not calling this card a great card or the best card. Man, it was a very, very, it had so many very, very good fights. You know, it wasn't like that. It was just competitive. It was interesting. It had upsets, you know. It didn't have a bunch of drama, but it had some swings and flows, you know. And so I liked the card. It was much better than I thought. That's weird. Back-to-back. Is it draws now? Or am I tripping? Is it back-to-back draws on? I think it's back-to-back draws now on the main events for Fox. So we'll see what they do this summer. Like I said, we've been talking a lot about Fox, but I'll give them credit for this one, no doubt about it. On to DAZN. Carlos, what is it? Gongora? I think it's Gongora. He was taking on Christopher Pearson, and I thought this might be pretty decent. And Gongora, he was like, nope. you know, it started out like mostly jabs, then he added a right cross. And by like the fifth or sixth round, Pearson was slowing down a little bit. His eye was closing up. He He was trapping Pearson on the ropes, roughing him up and whatever. I mean, he was, you know, it was bad. He was starting to take advantage of him. And I think it was a left hand. It was weird because, you know, it's one of those fights where I think it was a left hand that knocked him down. And then Pearson was on his feet. Then he took a knee, like, okay, no, I'm done. And then it was a TKO. So he went to a knee after being up, and you don't normally see that, but he did retire early. So Gongora had a good showing. I'm interested to see where they take him. You know, he came off that upset, so good win for him. Andre Liam Williams, this played out much like an Andre fight. You know, hard right hands, left hooks, buzzing him with the uppercuts as well. I mean, he threw that uppercut all day on Liam Williams. Liam Williams looked shaky, looked buzzed. He was, I mean, second round, got knocked down. It was, what was it, a left hand and an uppercut or something like that? More jabs. It was a left hand that knocked him down. That's right, it was a 1-2. And knocked him down in the second. Then you started seeing Williams land some okay shots, but the left uppercut, the right hooks, it was a little bit closer round. As was the fourth. You know, it did look like Andre, though, more uppercuts. Then he kind of was on a stick and move and some late uppercuts, some back and forth, but mostly dominated by Andre, fifth, sixth, seventh. But then Williams really started to move inside and get there, not just pressure, but actually get there and land hard right hands. And he landed a variety of good shots, enough to make it a tough win down the stretch for Andre. Andre looked a little shaky, like he got stood up once or twice in the fight. I don't know if he was fully hurt, but that one time that he got hit by that right, you could see him kind of go into defense mechanism, like, whoa, hold on, what's that? I'm a little buzzed. So, you know, I think it was like 9-3 I had it, something like that. And so it was a good fight. It was a competitive fight. And then, you know, after, of course, we had, you know, basically saying everybody, you know, he's the, I was going to say the cookie monster. He's the monster of the sport. He's, you know, nobody wants to fight him. And it just, it, you know, the thing is, like, one thing that we all talked about, a lot of us said when these three platforms started standing out the last couple of years, not just standing out, but happening, you know, PBC, Matchroom with DAZN, and obviously Top Rank ESPN. The key thing was is them matching their in-house, and then if they got big enough fights, they could cross-promote. Or if it's just a decent fight or a mandatory, well, then you could send him over here. We'll send him over there. And we've seen some of that. We've seen some of that. I mean, technically, Castaño and Teixeira just fought. Last year, there was a couple more matchups than you think. Technically, I think, isn't Postal a PBC guy now, too? He fought, or Ramirez. I believe he's. I'm wrong on that. But anyway, I think he is. But, you know, the point I'm making is, like, everybody was so high, not everybody, a lot of people, especially the media and the part-time media, were so high on Golovkin, and all he don't care about the money, all he wants is the belts, all he wants is the glory, and they can't get him to fight anybody beyond Canelo. And I get it, because that's the sport. It just keeps on. It's kind of like the lightweight thing, you know, how, oh, these guys are going to change the sport. They're going to fight. Dude, they're going to fight time. Well, hold on. They're going to fight. Some of them, yeah, they will, but it takes a little time, unfortunately. Politics, purse bids, all sorts of stuff. So it's just, you know, I've gone over this so many times in the last year that I don't want to sit here and have some kind of rant session on that, but it's like, if you got Golovkin, if you got Jacobs, if you got Canelo, you know, they tried to make the Billy Joe Saunders fight. Was that early 2019? I believe it was. But they've really, you know, as far as them making the fights over at DAZN, they've really only made Jacob. Well, I got to give them credit for the Saunders fight. Didn't go down. But that's like over 2 years ago. It's like about 2 years ago. A little over two. So they made Jacobs and Canelo. That's what they did make. Now, Derevyanchenko Golovkin got made, but it was that PBC purse bid thing. So, you know, and Eddie did say, well, we don't need – we come cheap all of a sudden. You know, we don't need – just give us what Derevyanchenko got. Well, that's the funny thing is you guys got the middleweights. Why don't you match them up? And so, to me, we can go back and forth with Charlo and Andre. No doubt about it. I've already done that. Both of them could have got career-high paydays on both platforms. Charlo going to the zone and vice versa. Let's not forget Andre had a one-off deal to fight Charlo or a multi-fight contract with Showtime that would be fighting Charlo. So, but yeah, this whole, you know, nobody wants to fight me, this, that, and the other. Okay, sure, but I still can't get over all the stuff that you did that has, you know, that showed that you didn't really want the big fights. And then you got this at the end, which was just... And I, you know, I think it was, it felt like he was trying to do DMX, right? X going to give it to you, RIP X. You know, it was cheesy. But a pretty good performance. Down the stretch, he got a hard fight. But, yeah, man, I mean, I think we just said it last week. If Charlo goes to the zone, it's more than likely going to be for Golovkin or Canelo. That's it. If Canelo gets out the zone, if he does, it's most likely in a decent-sized money fight for him on pay-per-view. You know what I mean? That Fox will build or whatever. You know what I mean? So, and there's still going to probably be some partnership. I mean, Fox ran what I saw, two different DAZN ads, Canelo ads. So, maybe they're trying to show goodwill. There has been a little communication with the DAZN stuff. Steven Espinosa did say, hey, we were willing to figure out Showtime and DAZN for Gervonta and Ryan Garcia. So I'm not going to sit here and keep going on this stuff because, it is what it is. It is what it is. But Andre needs a big fight, no doubt about it. But he signed over there to get the big fight. He signed also because for the mediocre fights and the crappy fights, he was also going to get paid more per fight. So I get that. But it can't be just woe is me on this side. We got all the middleweights. Charlo, if you want to fight a middleweight, you got to come here. That's what he said with a big bag of Gucci cash, right? Okay, cool. Well, where the fuck are the fights then? You got to make them. You know, you got to make them. I mean, it is what it is. Like I said, I give him credit for originally making the Billy Joe Saunders fight. But that was a while back. That was a while back, okay? So, anyway, the heavyweight prospect injured his leg. Why can't I think of his name? It starts with the M. It's, but he injured his ankle or something like that. He got upset. He lost too. Man, there was actually a fair amount of, we talked about prospects last week. Othala Jones, third, he got beat too. Fedosov, well, how the fuck do you say that name again? Anyway, he's the one who upset that heavyweight prospect that a lot of people were talking about, but that had something to do with the injury, obviously. So, like I said, it is a shortened show today, so I'm not going to go too long on some of this recap, but, all in all, it's one of those weekends that, on paper, it didn't look appetizing pretty much whatsoever. And it was actually probably because they were going against Jake Paul and Triller. And the amount of marketing, 2 weeks out, the only ones that marketed boxing like that is Fox. I mean, this fight was everywhere, especially digitally. The amount of influencers on the night, on camera, and also leading up to it. I mean, I even saw a clip on Twitter where you had Donald Trump Jr., looking like Oscar, by the way. Those two probably hang out. But he was even talking about, I mean, the amount of influencers these people have, the amount of money that's behind this app And I believe they're kind of, with some of these celebrities, obviously Snoop and among others, maybe Cube too, that they have some sort of deal with them where maybe they're getting a piece of the app, like a percentage, or maybe they're just getting paid a salary per year and then you show up to the events. I don't really know. Sold some of your rights out to it, whatever it is. Like, first of all, like I said, Oscar was a complete mess talking about all, like, the Frank Mir and Cunningham fight. I mean, they're throwing punches every second. This is awesome. I've been ringside, and this is like Ali Frazier, man, and, you know, all this stuff. And like I said, I know a lot of people were entertained off of Oscar. You know, Snoop got a lot of shit last time, but I think it's because there actually was more casual boxing fans because of the Tyson angle and the Roy Jones angle, but especially Tyson, especially younger casual fans, right? So they were like, they were cool with Snoop, but I also think there was an older generation that bought it too, and those people didn't like, or some of them didn't like Snoop, which always was kind of funny because it's like, dude, you're buying a pay-per-view of an exhibition of two 50-year-olds. But you're worried about what Snoop's saying? This time, though, if you were tuning in, and I didn't see the whole show, but if you were tuning in, and my nephews, by the way, are into this stuff, so I was, you know, I saw enough of it, let's put it that way. I personally didn't rent it. I didn't watch the full thing. The musical groups I wasn't into besides, what is it, Mount Westmore or something like that, the E-40 Cube, Too Short, who else? Well, Snoop. You know, I don't know. They don't have a record out, right? They don't have an album out, so that would be different. Did they all just do their own music or cuts of music? Or I didn't see the whole thing. And I'm not a fan of Bieber and all that. But, you know, musically, like I said, entertainment value, it is what it is. But Oscar, for those trying to tune in for Snoop, Oscar must have irritated the shit out of him. Because to me, you could say some of it was goofy and funny, and so you're entertained off of this dude being so whacked out of his mind. Or some people were kind of like, that were fans of him, were kind of like sad about it. It was a mess. And it was more about the broadcast team than the fights, which I that doesn't surprise me. But they went with that theme even more. But the Jake Paul, you know, left, right hand, knocked him out. Did he take a dive? I think he got hit pretty hard and was like, I'm good, dude. Plus, the dude came in with a dad bod. I mean, the dad bod is what I said. I think I cut that short. But when you saw him at the weigh-in, you're like, all right, dude, this dude's not taking it serious. And the reason why I didn't do some kind of in-depth breakdown is because every time I tried to look a couple different times, even actually when Portland was telling me about stuff, and his thoughts on it 2 weeks ago, I was looking at Askren's, you know, film. And I'm looking at him like, dude, he crouches. He's in a wrestling stance, so it's hard to tell when he throws a punch. Then you saw him do some other stuff sparring. They released it, and he looked like he was going to try to rough him up. And to me, that didn't look good at all. And then there were some media members that were like, dude, when he was warming up on the pads, like, dude, I think he's been high. He put out that film to fool us all. He could throw a punches, dude. And that really didn't do much for me. But that was kind of funny because so now all of a sudden he could throw a good punch because you can see it by hitting pads. But when fighters do it, like boxers, when they do that, that doesn't count for shit. It was a little like, are you sure? Because I still don't see much out of it. So Jake Paul won. Frank Mir had what, 50 pounds on him? I don't even know because I didn't see the whole thing. But 50 or 60? Some of it I muted because, like I said, I was FaceTiming, blah, 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 blah. But, and I saw, you know, highlights and all that other stuff like that in like chunks of it or whatever. But that was just a jab fest, and Frank Mir got in some good shots. I'll give him credit. It didn't surprise me he could take some good shots because he's got so much weight on him. And let's face it, Cunningham, to me, didn't look like he's trying to knock him out, but maybe a couple moments where he was a more aggressive, but Cunningham's a shell of himself anyway. So I'm hearing Oscar saying this is a great fight. They're every second they're just going for it, and it's like, nah, it is what it is. I give Frank Mir credit for lasting the distance, though, and he did land a couple of good shots, though. I'll give him that, but other than that, he was getting picked apart slowly but surely. If that would have went 12 rounds, they probably would have stopped it. But the fight, I mean, oh, God, Progray, you know, I guess they did turn it around, and he now has a win on his resume. I believe, I should double check that. I believe that that's how it is. Let me just double check that, because I believe, I mean, clearly Red Catch got, so it did get changed to a TKO. Okay. Red Catch caught, you know, acted like he caught like a bad low shot, or like he hit me in the liver behind my back or whatever. And it didn't even make contact with the fist. It was like the wrist area. And so it never really had impact. So he clearly, when people say it was a dive, see, I don't look at that as a dive. I think he just quit. I don't think he said, all right, dude, in the fourth round, dude, you're going to hit me, and we're going to fucking do this. I think he just got hit and was like, I'm good, dude, because he was hurt a couple times, or at least one full time. He got hurt. So it looked like, uh-oh, you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to last long. But it was kind of a weird fight, a weird pace to the fight. Progray didn't look great, but then he did start putting his punches together and landing hard lefts or whatever. But, you know, he got the win. He moves on. But once Snoop got on the mic again, then it was like, okay. It's funny because the whole cussing, we're hearing a lot of all the cussing and the smoking weed and all that, or talking about weed and whatnot. And it was kind of funky. I liked how Snoop was like, leave Al Bernstein alone, dude. You know? And Al was trying to be as professional as he could, but I thought he did like a classy, hey, let's toast or whatever, you know. But some people were out of character. With Snoop has a brand, and it's not even a character. That's him, basically. Or at least he's established himself to the public as him. So when he just does him, that's doing him. We expect that. But when the other guys start to cuss for no reason, or they're going to get all bro-y and be like, oh, dude, you know, like, then it's like, all right, dude, these are guys are just, and they're just better off being professional because this shit's cheesy. And it's just over the top. Like, it was like they were trying too hard. And when you have Mario Lopez and Snoop Dogg and a little bit of Al carrying the broadcast, that kind of shows you. To me, it was even more about the broadcast than the fight this time. And like I said, I understand that the stage probably looked better this time. I'm not sure who was all in the crowd, by the way. But because we didn't really see it, which is funky, but I get it because of the setup. But the look of it was not nearly as good, I'll say that. And that's something that stood out to me last time. Usually I don't really give a shit about the look, and I really don't. But I'm critiquing it because this is what they're giving us. So the fights clearly are not what is really worthy. It's the whole thing. And so if you're like the whole rap, R&B, hip-hop thing with the YouTubers, with Snoop, with all these influencers, you wonder how much money they're having to pay all these people to do this in the marketing and whatnot. It is funny how the press really, boxing press isn't really talking about that. But, and you wonder how much Jake Paul's making. What was it, $800,000 that Progray got or something like that? They said he was a little lower, but he's going to make money on the back end. When it comes to these pay-per-view buys, we heard a million, then we heard 1.2, 1.5, 1.8. We heard a bunch of stuff, and it is what it is. I'm not going to act like I know exactly what the number is. We normally never really know exactly what the number is. But and you know, it's not just through the app, you know, so you can get it in a variety of ways, you know. So are all the numbers 100% out? I don't, you know what I mean? That's a little funky. I know there's an app involved, so that plays into it as well. But what we do know is, you know, they have a track record of saying, well, we have this many users on our app, and then it's half that amount. You know, Billboard did a article about it. And, you know, this is 2019, you know, they said that they had over 26 million monthly active users. But the company, you know, the source with direct knowledge with the user base said it was about half of that. Then in July, they said it hit 50 monthly at a 600% growth rate when that actually was closer to 25 monthly active. So, and, you know, in a statement, CEO Mike Liu said there is no legal definition of monthly active users, and Triller will no longer share monthly active users or daily active users as they don't accurately represent the company's value. There is no legal definition, for example, blah, blah, blah. So they're not publicly traded, so they can lie about it. You know, they can lie about it. So like I said, though, if it is 1.5, let's say it's half of that. Let's say it's just 500,000 or 800,000, or maybe it is a million. That's still a lot. But I'll say this. If you look at here's an example of – now, there wasn't as many influencers. They did have Snoop. I get all that. But when you talk about the what is it, two different fights by the Pauls, they have the Logan Paul, Jake Paul on the undercard, because it was the K-side Logan Paul too, right? Why didn't that – didn't they sell that for 10 bucks and do a million? And they did like a million something in the UK where boxing is even bigger, but they didn't hit a million – dollar gate here pre-pandemic in LA. That's a little funky, but I understand it's a younger fan base, so maybe they look at the price tag on the ticket and go, ah, I'm going to rent it with my buddies. That's cool. I get that. But why didn't, for 20 bucks, why didn't DAZN get like 500,000 subs that night? And then Jake Paul, even after that, they fought. There's two different times they did this on DAZN, right? Because, yeah, it was like late 2019, early, because it was in Miami. That's right, it was in Miami. It was for the Super Bowl right around that time. So why didn't 500,000 people sign up? And people say, well, maybe they did. Well, didn't they release Canelo Jacobs at like almost 700,000 or 750, or was it between 6 and 7? I can't remember. And I think it topped out at 800,000 or 850 at the end of that fall season, fight season, right? With Canelo and Golovkin, and then, and I think, was that where the Jake Paul stuff was too, in the Logan Paul? And then to top it off, Ruiz, you know, and the part two, the rematch with Joshua. So why didn't they put out a press release saying we had 1.3 or 4, you know, million subs? They would have done that for sure. If they put out 650,000, they're going to put out 1.3. And so that's the funky part of it. I'm not saying what's real, what's not, but when I look at it, it's like, well, why didn't – if you're paying 50 bucks for this, for 20 bucks, you don't think Jake Paul's fan base knew that he was fighting for 20 bucks? He had fought already for 10. So that's the only funky part, and then the live gate. But the live gate probably was always going to be funky because – that fan base is not used to paying expensive tickets like that unless it's like a huge music festival. And that's the whole feel of this, and that's why Triller is working like that, not just because they have a bunch of money pouring into it and a bunch of influencers and celebrities, but and Jake Paul. But, you know, they have musical acts. Now, I don't know how much that costs to have somebody swing by for three songs like that, these big names, and Bieber and all that. The overhead's got to be kind of nuts on this. But why isn't Jake Paul getting an upfront? If this thing's doing 1.5, Jake Paul should be making like 50 million on it. But it should be upfront, 10 or 20 upfront, easy. Like maybe he's trying to, you know, allegedly tax dodge there. We've seen, you know, the guarantees on hours, the real guarantees. Or maybe it's like, well, if it does this, you got that. But otherwise, you'll get this amount, you know. And they don't always claim it, you know, for the state commission. I get that. But it's just weird not to at least claim a million or 5 million or 10 million or something like that. It's a little funky. So I'm not worried about what it's doing. It's drawing attention. It's an app, and that's what it's trying to do. I don't know how long this is going to last, if it's going to be the next few years, if this is the future of boxing. But what I do know is if – let's say the investors, right, because the investors were like, well, we don't have investors like you, Al. Well, Al went and got investors, and I'm talking about media and part-time media members, because they were always saying that in other promoters or managers. Well, we don't have an investor. Well, he went out and got the fucking investors. That shit just wasn't sitting on a tree, and he picked it. You know what I mean? Oh, hey, it's just falling out of the sky. You know, all these deals are just falling right in my lap. You know, like, my thing is, if he would have used the investor money to do Triller, could you imagine what the press would say if you didn't pay him? Triller's paying these guys. Look at Coppinger now talking about pay-per-view. He hasn't responded to me on pay-per-view on Twitter in so long, and he used to always if I'd give him a dig. And it wouldn't be a dig like a personal dig. It'd just be like, hey, dude, what the fuck, you know? So, like, hey, what's this? You know, you said this. Well, what the fuck is? You don't like the Charlo card, you know, but imagine if Triller put on the Charlo card. They'd be like, dude, this is the deepest one we've had. These are great fights. This is the way you blend it and all that. It's just, it's funny. If Al Heyman and the PBC would have been pay-per-view only, because remember, they cared so much about the fans. If they would have put out the investor money and they would have put out the pay-per-view, because he was in the music industry, so he could have done something like this. And by the way, it's not the first. What is it, KO Nation? It's not the first time this thing. Butterbean's been in the ring. Like, come on. Like, we've had these exhibitions. But it's just a lot of money out there and a lot of attention, and let's just get it. Why not? So I understand. But I'm not a hater because I don't buy these pay-per-views. I'm glad Teofimo got paid more for this fight because he got screwed in his last fight, but it doesn't mean I'm going to go buy the pay-per-view. Why? Because listen to the co-feature. McBride and Holyfield? On pay-per-view. That's a co-feature. Come on, dude. Like, and I'm just going off my standard definition of entertainment value. Mine. Not yours. Mine. Cool. If everyone has a different definition of entertainment value. I just don't need a paid member of the press or the part-time press that has a lot of sway to an extent, both on a platform and, or multiple platforms and just on Twitter, right? To be able to sway fans into thinking shit. It's just funny how, because it's popular, they're like, fuck it, dude, I'm going to cover it. I get that. You got, you know, it brings content. I'm talking about it right now. But it is what it is. The Triller, Jake Paul, it is what it is. I'm not hating, but I'm not going to sit there and act like it's a great thing either. But like I've always said, it's better that Jake Paul is putting, you know, wrapping up his hands, putting on boxing gloves and going into the ring. Because, and people are buying it, no matter if it's like, I said, 500, 1,000, or 1.5. Whatever the fuck it is, that's a lot, and it is getting people involved. And like I said last week, I got a couple of messages on this, that they already saw that take place, that when you see this, and you call that boxing, and then maybe there'll be a fighter that Jake Paul says, hey, dude, that's my favorite fighter, and all of a sudden you get on his bandwagon, and they see a real, real, real fight, they're going to be like, oh, shit, this is bomb. And so it does have potential to help grow it. I don't think it's going to hurt it. But the whole thing of, oh, it's unprofessional, and oh, they were cussing and all that. Dude, you're buying a circus pay-per-view, dude. And I think it is a good idea, you know, to get the fight little brand thing, the Fight TV thing, that's fine. I thought the Versus thing was really fine. It goes right into that hip-hop culture thing. And so I think Triller's doing good at what they're doing, but it's an app. They're not worried about making a ton of money right now. They're getting a ton of, you know, influencers and investors to do it. So it's not costing them a lot. So you got to keep that all in mind, but I'm not hating on it. I'm not out here hating on it, but I'm not going to act like I want to watch Oscar De La Hoya against an MMA guy. I just, if you're an active fighter and shit pops off because you're a big name, okay. You know, Mayweather, McGregor, whatever. But when you're, it just, to me, it's like, all right, dude, it's just, I'm good. But Jake Paul, hey, he's taking the training serious. The first fight I saw of him, I could tell he gets straight punched. So I respect that. I respect that part of it. I have to say, I respect that he's doing it. And like I said, he's good at, he's a love him or hate him guy. That's what he is. And he's realistic. Like, you know, he'll say some, all sorts of stuff that makes you go, oh my God, dude. But you kind of got to be like that to do what he did on YouTube and all that. You know, he was on Disney, So he obviously had a fan base off of that that was young, but then he did a bunch of wild stuff on YouTube, and that's where he's at. That's where he's at. Surely boxing's put on some bad pay-per-views and whatnot, you know what I mean? Over the years, they really have. Speaking of pay-per-view, Aram revealed, this is Boxing Scene, Dan Rath, you know, that TV plans, it's more than likely it'll be in Saudi, but it says ESPN pay-per-view, but it's pay-per-view. You sign up on the app on ESPN Plus, but it'll be pay-per-view, they said. The normal stuff, it'll probably start a little early. But that would be dope if they could get that fight. I'm not going to really talk too much about that fight because it's just oversaturated, you know what I mean? Actually, tonight, Toe to Toe Tuesday returns. I'm wondering, I talked about Tuesdays because FS1 is going to do MLB. I think it kicks in June on Tuesdays. So I wonder if it is going to be Toe to Toe Tuesdays again, in a sense. Maybe they're not going to call it that, but I wonder if that's the case, or maybe they're doing it now and it'll be on a Saturday night in the summer. But Frank Martin and Jerry Perez, two unbeaten fighters. Martin is the pretty clean favorite in this one. So there is a card tonight. There's also a card on Ring City USA, or for Ring City USA, I should say. And I believe, yeah, that one got, actually, now that I think about it, that one actually got, but that's on Thursday. It is a ho-hum weekend, no doubt about it. Yeah, Jermaine Franklin tested positive for COVID. He's out of the Shaw fight, so it was an interesting fight on paper, but they've been pretty good, the cards, so you should check that out. Thursday is when that is. Apoche also had a knockout against Deion Nicholson in the third round. I don't think that was that televised? I think that game went late, so I don't think it actually was televised. But that heavyweight upset was a big upset. Dude was I'm looking at it from Jim Karras Boxing, 10-1 underdog. That's pretty intense. But yeah, like I said, it's not some sort of jam-packed weekend. The best fight, shots out to the UK, is probably going to be, the hell is that fight? That is this weekend, right? Maybe I'm tripping. Oh, yeah. It's Bentley and Cash. Let me look at the odds. Denzel Bentley and Felix Cash. yeah, so plus 175. Plus 186, the highest for Bentley as an underdog, and the highest as a favorite for Felix Cash is minus 227. So that's the most evenly matched card we have. Christopher Diaz takes on Emmanuel Navarrete, who's coming off a really good performance, I thought, against Villa. But that's like a 6-1. Hopefully that's just a stylistically a good fight. You know what I mean? Actually, Denis Gravachov, or was it Gravachov, and Marcus Brown fight, too. I forgot about that one. Is that televised, though, on Tuesday? I don't remember if it is. I know DAZN has some cards overseas from Spain, from Barcelona. That ESPN and ESPN Deportes, ESPN Plus, that's Emmanuel Navarrete and Christopher Diaz, I think I said that. Edgar Berlanga takes on Demon Nicholson. We'll see if he can keep that going. Josue Vargas and Willie Shaw, that could be a little interesting test. And that is on Saturday. So I'm looking through the schedule. There's a fight in Germany, Hamburg, on Fight TV. Yeah, it's a pretty light schedule. Last week had a lot of fights, but it was light. But it turned out good, so maybe we can get something sneaky. You know what I mean? I did get some messages after some prospects lost, though, which was pretty funny. We talked about all the American talent last week, and I know there'd be pushback on that because we're talking American talent. Oh, my God. But, I also said that some of these prospects are going to lose, you know, like some of these guys are going to sneak up that we don't even know. We're not saying Nothing like that. So it is what it is. I did Eddie Hearn, after the fight of Andre, I forgot to mention this, Golovkin and Mira. And, you know, I get it. It's in Japan, that's a big fight. If the, you know, for DAZN and stuff, totally get it. But he's talking about December 31st. So New Year's Eve, that's when he's going to wait for that long for Murata? Like, he must really not think he's getting anything to do with the Canelo fight in September. And maybe he's going to fight in December and then try to get that next May, the following May fight with Canelo. I don't know, but it's not that there's a bunch wrong with the Mura fight, but it's just like, damn. I mean, it's a nice fight and stuff, but come on, dude. Actually, Jed Goodman talked about celebrity boxing is nothing new. So we're going to kind of get into fight news, and we're going to get that Showtime schedule. I'm going to check that out. And, of course, Boxing Twitter, you know, our Boxing Twitter segment where we go over, you know, a bunch of tweets. This is going to be a little shortened today, but some of it is just fanboy stuff that makes you giggle or makes you go, what the fuck, dude? Some of it's media members acting like fanboys, so I'm showing that. And also just damn good tweets where you're like, yes, I'm retweeting that. But he makes a good point here. In 2002, and also in the 90s, and before that too, but 2002, celebrity boxing special on Fox averaged 15.5 million viewers, which is way more than anything the BBC or UFC's gotten, obviously. And he says, celebs sell. Whether it's watching them fight, whether it's watching them dance, whether it's watching them sing, the Masked Singer. And that's what it is. It's name recognition. So it's like they want Jake Paul to step up. People want him to. But, you know, that's what makes – like the thing I do like about it is he's not trying to say he's going to take on these professional boxers. He's saying, I'm going to fight these MMA dudes who think they can beat me in boxing because they throw hands once in a while in a gym and in a fight. Well, we know MMA is much more than just throwing punches. So you're barely, not that you're ever, you know, you are working on it, but not to that level. So, and he is putting in the work. He is putting in the work. Someone just sent me a tweet. Oscar said, show my fucking face more. When they tossed it to Coppinger between rounds. Yeah, dude, he totally was saying that. It's like, wow, dude, what the hell is going on? This dude said I illegally streamed Jake Paul fight, and I feel like I still got robbed, sorry. John actually says, Triller Fight Club is kind of like a night when you go to the club with your friends and watch a bunch of fights in the parking lot. No doubt about it. It did have that feel. What was I saying? I forgot what I was saying. I kind of went all over the place. I think I finished my point. Yeah, it says $690,000, Jake Paul. That's what it says. And $850 for pro grade. But I know he's getting more money than that. But, yeah, the upfront guarantee, it is weird that they're not even showing a little bit more of it. That is kind of weird. This is according to ESPN top-ranked sources. Confirmed contracts are signed. This is a couple days ago. Eddie Hearn revealed but explained this is dependent on them securing a site with both camps agree, blah, blah, blah. Oh, wait, actually, this is an old – someone sent this to me. We have 30 days from now. Irritating progress because it's like, hey, just get the fights done. Just get them done. Frank Warren brought up a good point about Rob McCracken and the fact that he'll be in Tokyo for Team Great Britain in the Olympic Games from July 23rd to August 8th. So with that kind of play into it as maybe a reason it would get pushed back potentially, and it sounds like Eddie Hearn addressed that saying, though, we understand that could happen. This is what he said. Has not ruled out the possibility that Anthony Joshua could face Fury without Rob McCracken. July 24th is the rough date that would clash, so we'll see, all that type of stuff. But to me, this whole Triller thing is just, it is what it is. like I said, it is what it is. I know I'm going to get comments either way. And we'll just see where it goes. You know, we'll just see where it goes. Like I said, to each his own on entertainment value. The only people I have to be critical about are some of the press members who are bigging this up but dumping on good pay-per-views, you know what I mean, and putting out just stupid shit where you're like, okay, dude, oh, is that how that goes? Why didn't you say that before type stuff? Okay, let's look at it here. This Showtime up front, I think they called it last time. So from May to September, they have their schedule done. Now, obviously, there's going to be some show box thrown in there. But as far as their quote-unquote championship boxing, there was 9 events, I believe, announced. Am I right with that? Yeah, 9 events. There's going to be some undercards, obviously. A lot of them are triple headers. And we'll go from worst to best. How about that? Benavidez against Jose Uzutagi is like, it's one of those fights where, you know, a little while ago, it would have felt better, you know what I mean? Because he seemed like a dark horse and all that. And you know, I'm talking about, Jose Uzutagi. But, you know, he did recently lose to Linnell Thompson. Obviously, he got beat by Plant, but, you know, did pretty good down the stretch in that one. I don't know. I mean, it's not a horrible fight, but it is a fight where you're like, you know, whatever. Also, the whatever is Jermall Charlo. You know, that's not a great fight. The Juan Montiel, he's a hard hitter. He's a young fighter. He recently got a win, but it's not something that I'm looking for. Now, maybe that they're both in there with guys they should take care of. Maybe that means that is a title eliminator, the Benavidez fight. And that could be where they have the interim WBC 168 to make the Charlo Benavidez, which turns that into, let's say, in 9 months or something after this year for Canelo, then it'd be another mandatory if that's the case. That could be interesting, too. But, yeah, those are the fights where I'm like, eh. A lot of people dump it on the Chris Colbert Gamboa, and I get it. It's not, like, a great fight. One thing is, though, he has, like, an interim secondary belt, right? So, he's not a prospect anymore, Chris Colbert, but he still is. He's a contender at 130. So, he's still a guy that would benefit from rounds against a veteran. And so am I super excited about this fight? No. But where he's at in some of the fights that can or cannot be made, I don't think it's as bad as everybody's talking about. It's not – I don't think it's as bad as the other two that I just mentioned first. But only because of his age, and if he goes 12 rounds, that's still a good thing for him in this part of the career. And let's be honest, 126 and 130 are better for Gamboa anyway. Clearly, Gamboa is in somewhat cash mode, you know, cash out mode. Of course, I don't blame him. But he did go the distance, you know, with Gervonta almost, right? And with, I almost said Lundy, Haney. So, you know, it is what it is. It's not something I'm really looking forward to, but the rest are fights that I'm really looking forward to. The Rigondeaux, Casimura. Dude, sign me up because of stylistic. I mean, Casimura is going to come forward and try to knock Rigondeaux's block off. And Rigondeaux of late, and at this weight class as well, let's not forget this bantamweight fits him a lot better. So I like that fight. That's a very good fight to me. Luis Neri and Brandon Figueroa. We'll see what Neri shows up. He's been stuck between styles, trying to be a little bit more responsible. Figueroa's style probably doesn't allow him to be too responsible. It's probably going to be a good stylistic fight. And so I really like, on paper, Figueroa and Neri is one of my favorite fights. And the kicker is they get to face Stephen Fulton September 11th. So they already have that locked in, which I love. I love it. I mean, yeah, does Fulton have to wait from January to September? Sure, but look who he's fighting. So then it becomes worth the wait. It's not just him hanging out and, well, let's hope, let's see if he gets a fight. No, that's what's next. Obviously a draw or something like that. But even in a cut or an injury, you do have some time, you know, to heal that. So I like that fight a lot. The Ubali Donaire, sign me up for that. Donaire showed something that he had something left in the tank more than I thought. And Ubali has a style that fits Donaire. All right, you come to me, I'll counter you, dude. Please come to me, though. I need an Ubali to come at me. Donaire would just go into, his reflexes aren't the same, but he kind of goes into muscle memory at that point. And so I really like that fight. I think that's a damn good fight. I was anticipating it, but both of them ran into COVID, unfortunately. So then you have Gervonta Davis and Mario Barrios. And the undercard, that's a pay-per-view. The undercard is Erickson Lubin and Jason Rosario, which I think the Rosario is a perfect opponent for Lubin. We all didn't really want to see the Lubin-Charlo fight until Lubin kind of fights some more contenders. Let's see it. You got to see it, dude. And this is a good fight. I like this fight as a co-feature. Does Barrios Davis stand out as a just like a, man, that is a great pay-per-view? No, no. It has a chance to be very good stylistically, I'll say. But no, it doesn't stand out as a great main event, but I get it. You know, Gervonta Davis can draw fans. He does have a healthy minimum. He probably will be on pay-per-view. I don't know for the rest of his time or not. I don't know. Like I said, it's only one pay-per-view for the whole, you know, early spring and summer. And really, so far, for Showtime, it'd be only one so far, and that would be, what, June 26th for the whole year so far. So if Fox has one, they'll probably have more too, of course. But the reason why I like it, I mean, obviously he thought he was fighting Ryan Garcia. Then Garcia chased Pacquiao, which I get why he did. But, you know, you're not going to sit around waiting and waiting and waiting just for a fight to not happen, potentially. So I don't really blame Gervonta. Teofimo's tied up. The Haney thing probably wasn't going to happen. So, you know, Top Rank's got 130, a good chunk of it, so they're kind of working that stuff out. As you can see this year, they're doing a damn good job with it. Frampton Herring won that fight clearly. And then Oscar Valdez highlight reel knockout, right, against Burchell. So that's cool. They got that going over there. So to me, the size of a 140-pounder, a contender at that weight class, he's a legit top 10 guy. He's got power, too. He's a big dude. That's what makes it interesting, because at 135, Gervonta didn't look great power-wise. And so is that gonna transfer over to 140? And I understand the three belts thing. Somebody was talking about if this is like the only person that's won three different belts on the secondary thing. And I believe, did someone say Robert Guerrero? I know Gamboa. I think Jake was talking. I'll actually look that up on my Twitter segment. But it's a good fight. I like the fight, and they already gave us – that's another thing about pay-per-view we always talk about. Stylistically, the main event is going to be interesting, the matchup. Is it awesome? Is it great? Great? No, it's not, but I like it. I think it's a good fight, basically because of the size, obviously. But Lubin and Rosario, sign me up for that. That's a great co-feature. It's like, sweet, dude. Awesome. That could be like they're still trying to build Erickson back up. So that could be a decent main event, you know, or a really good one on, say, FS1 or something. But I like the co-feature a lot. And then the creme de la creme, the crown jewel of the whole thing, Jermell Charlo against Brian Castaño, a fight that a lot of people said, there's no way this is going to happen, yada, 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 and it's happening. It's a damn good fight. It's not on pay-per-view. It's not the co-feature. It's not. You don't have to pay for this. Now, obviously, you got to pay for it to have Showtime, but, I mean, this, come on, dude. Like, this is a damn good fight, and they went right to it. A lot of people said nope. I mean, a lot of people said Showtime's out of business. They're done. They're done. Did you see the Charlo numbers? They're done, you know. But here they are. You got to give them credit. Now, you know, in 2015, dumped on them. so much so the Showtime account for boxing stopped following me. I wasn't going over the top critical, calling them fucking, you know, personal names or nothing. That's not my style. But, you know, I was just saying what it was. And same with 2019. Pretty weak. Last year, I thought they did a good job. Their schedule kind of fell apart from COVID at the end, that Ubala, Donaire, and another one that started out the year. But this year, they're doing good. Three out of the four cards have been pretty – I mean, that Broner card, you know, the main event, that sucked. But they had the 122s popping off. They recently just had, you know, a good double. Actually, it turned out to be – yeah, three good fights. I forgot because the opener was the best fight of the card, actually. So that was legit. So Showtime is having a great year so far with this now. You know, they had – it's like, okay, about three out of four. I like that. But now they put this out. So we got to give them credit, and we got to give them credit where credit is due. And now, you know, I've been critical of Fox. I wrote an in-depth article. I had an in-depth segment about it. We'll see where they go. You know, I just gave him credit because of this last weekend. But overall, it's been, you know, mediocre to really poor. But, yeah, all the folks, you know, I know multiple people that have podcasts, whether I know them or not or whether I talk to them or not, but I just know them in a sense. And also on Twitter, with you know, a lot of people, you know, will tweet all this stuff about boxing. And although this Showtime announcement did get more all-around support from the media. Glad you could make it this time. Maybe it's because Tyson didn't, the name Tyson wasn't near it or whatever, but I still see some people that do podcasts, like multiple podcasters, and I'd say three or four, at least four channels that have been saying Showtime's going to be done. And they haven't done a Showtime scheduled video. I know multiple podcasts, multiple this. I know people that usually blog about stuff. They have a lot, you know. So it is kind of funny. It's like, well, which one is it, dude? It's like, and maybe they go out of business. Maybe this is the last great schedule and it's over. I'm guessing that's not the case, though. But hey, maybe that's the case. It just seems weird that if this is the deal's done. Why would Al put all this, you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe the Fox budget is so messed up that that's how it's going to happen. I don't know. But right now, their schedule's damn good. I mean, two fights where I'm like, nah. The Gamboa fight, like I said, for Colbert, where he is in his career, 12 rounds or less with a veteran's not going to hurt him. You know, it's not going to hurt him. It's not that bad of a fight. It's not, you know, I'm not going to sit here and I'm taking the night off, dude. You know, I'm just not going to dump on it as much as I would. I mean, clearly the Jermall Charlo Montiel, that's weak. That's just weak. It could be action-packed, but it's weak. But it also makes me feel like they're going to try to put him in another big fight then next. Because he came off a really good fight, and that's usually how it goes. Good fight, mandatory, or weak opponent, good fight. Some people go too many weak opponents in a row. Yes, I'm talking you, Arislandi Lara. Navrate, for a little bit, they were keeping, you know, they were doing his. Now he's, well, I don't know how good of a opponent he's in with. I think Navrate is going to win that Christopher Diaz fight. But I think it'll be entertaining while we get there. So that does it for the Showtime stuff. I really like that schedule, though. It's solid, dude. It is solid. Like I said, there's not two or three pay-per-views spread out or anything like that. I like it. I think it's damn good. And, you know, if you were a person out there dogging, you know, the PBC this year, Showtime, or well, Fox or whatever, just the PBC right now because they haven't had a lot of, you know, fight announcements. This is what Al does, though, in Showtime, too. But this is what Al does. You don't hear a ton of stuff. You hear some little leaks of, oh, that fight? Oh, that sounds like a good fight. Oh, Figueroa and Larry? I like that. We knew Figueroa and Larry and Lubin and, you know, so we knew some of these fights. We knew, kind of knew Barrios was the backup plan and all that. But they just released nine events. And some of them, I mean, the co-features look pretty damn good for that Figueroa card. You know, I mean, like, the co-features, some of them could be even better. on one of these stay busy type things. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I like the fight a lot, though. I think it's a good, or the card, the whole, that's a pretty damn good schedule. And someone's going to have to beat it, because right now, no one has it beat. But we'll see. Hopefully someone does beat it, because that means it adds to year, adds to the year in general. Like I said earlier, I think a lot of fans, especially kind of the common fan, the semi-casual, a lot of especially dudes, claim to be hardcore fight fans on Twitter, but they're really not. And that's okay. That's okay. Some of them are snobs and they think they are, but they're just not, you know? And that's fine, even if it's a good fight card and it may get a poor rating on ESPN or Showtime or something like that, they'll still dog the rating. It's like, well, didn't you say you wanted good fights, though? So which one is it, dude? Which one is it? But anyway, we're going to kind of finish up with some fight news and out of here. Lots of people, you know, Billy Joe Saunders was talking about, I signed a contract thinking the money would be based on no crowds. And to me, it's like, why would you think that? I guess there's 70,000 tickets which sold, which is awesome if that's true. It's super awesome. Either way, if they get to 50, it's fucking awesome. But I just don't understand why you thought that – why didn't you think that they'd be doing – since it's been like since October, right, since they've been doing – yeah, because Gervonta – wasn't it Gervonta and Leo Santa Cruz in Texas? That's what opened it up, the first one in the States for boxing, like a big crowd or a decent crowd. Then Canelo and Spence. I mean, what do you mean? I don't get it. I mean, why wouldn't you think that there'd be a crowd? But maybe, you know, maybe Eddie. Let's see here. All right, boxing Twitter. So someone said this shit is so rigged because they see a smiling Paul Askren after the fight, right, when he's walking away with his wife or whatever. And this Tony Leibert, this is the face of a man who just finessed his way into a very large paycheck. I will not take anything Jake Paul does seriously until it's not hosted by Triller. The entire event felt staged, much like the last one. I will not take anything Jake Paul does seriously until it's not hosted by Triller. It's like, but then did you buy it then? Did you know going in that this, come on, dude, what are you, come on. This one's from Fred. Oscar could have had $100 million and be the only promoter handling PBC, and he said they were trying to steal his company. Now he's drunk, high, and trying to promote a fight on Triller. And his own stole Canelo. Yeah, he's basically right there. I mean, it's crazy, you know, the things that he said just to sell stuff. I mean, it's like, wow, dude. Like that note that he had, you know, that note that he had about, you know, about Oscar, or that note that he put out to the fan base and for the media and all that, that shit was funny, dude. Remember for the Mayweather-McGregor, he said, oh, I need, it's like SOS, I mean, it's in the middle of the night, they have me hostage. It was a really weird letter. It's the fans that we can't let this happen to our sport. We need to stand up. Now he's selling pay-per-views fighting. We don't even know who. And he's just trashed. He's about to fight in July. So, yeah. Anyway. What else we got here? So, I think that's it for fight news. There's not a, this is Raging Babe. Just thinking Ryan Garcia won an eliminator, earned a title shot, claims he doesn't care about belts, but he pays a sanctioning fee, which is a good point, for eliminators. He could have just had a title shot but looked the other way. Not one word from the media. On another note, I really like Garcia Fortuna, which that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. I wouldn't say not one word from the media, but I think it's a good point. This is from a manager, Rick. The level of coverage ESPN gave Jake Paul in the circus, both pre-fight and post, they should be ashamed. But ashamed. They not only embarrass the sport, but themselves. They don't even promote their own fighters' own events the same way. It's pathetic to see when they have the best there is. Sounds kind of like hating. Remember Kmart, how dominant it was in the retailers in the 80s? They must have thought Walmart was no threat. Boxing promoters seem to have a mindset of Kmart. Wouldn't be surprised if someone out of nowhere dominates boxing while big promoters go out of business. Remember, though, that it's not the money. You know, we always talked about the money when it came to Mayweather cards that would do just barely a million or below it or whatever. And they'd say, well, it's not a successful card. And, you know, there was a lot of scrutiny when it came to the overhead. We don't know their overhead. So, yes and no. I mean, the amount of money you're going to have to put out for these musical acts. So you want them to do pay-per-views now? Which one is it? So you don't want pay-per-views because it's hurt the sport. Then you want pay-per-views if only you spend millions and millions of dollars on it and lose money. But then we'll make fun of you for losing money. This is Jake Donovan. Gamboa won interim titles in 3 divisions. Robert the Ghost Guerrero won interim titles in 2 divisions, including his unprecedented unified interim WBA, WBO lightweight title status after he beat Gatsidis. That's right. That's a good call. That's a good call. And that was off the question. Serious question. I want a serious answer. Will Tank become the first ever 3-division secondary champ if he beats Barrios? And, of course, in boxing. And this is what I'm talking about. Okay, this is a paid media member, Woodsy. No BS. I'm legit interested in seeing how this main event plays out and how Frank Mir does against sometimes my partner Cunningham and if Red Catch can upset Prograis. I see more things on this pay-per-view that intrigue more than the majority of pay-per-views, which is just bullshit. This is the same guy that put out a buyer beware, literally buyer beware for the Pacquiao Thurman fight because he didn't want people coming back and going, oh, Thurman ran for the last couple of rounds. He basically was saying stylistically, this could be a bad fight on pay-per-view and don't cry if it is, as if we haven't had bad. A lot of the top level fights aren't brawls, dude. You know, that's how it works, but that was a good fight. But to sit there and say, I see more things on this paper that intrigue me, but he didn't say the music. He said the 3 fights. So he says, I'm interested to see if Red Catch could upset Prograis. Were you interested to see Red Catch upset fill in the blank, Danny Garcia? No, because it was a stay busy, tune up fight. This is exactly what it was, and it should be called that. Frank Mir and Cunningham, not really going to be awesome, but it turned out okay. It did, I have to admit. But to say that this is more intriguing than the majority of pay-per-views is just so ridiculous. I mean, come on, dude. Like, seriously? And he went on to say stuff like, I like the edginess and the swearing and all that. And that's cool. I don't mind that at all, you know. I think that'll be about it. Oh, someone after I did the show when I didn't talk about Liam Williams sent me this. Wow, the odds keep going up for Liam Williams. One bookie now has it +250 underdog. That means if you bet 100 on him, you'll get absolutely fuck all in return. You can tell us someone from the UK or at least acting like it. Oh, by the way, Clarissa Shields returns June 10th on ESPN. 2 for her MMA debut. I guess the whole championship prize is $1 million, something like that. So that's cool. Good for her. I'm glad that she's staying busy. Oh, yeah, here's Glazer. Someone sent this to me here. He was responding to Mannix, but he said the fighters fight, meaning the fighters are just going to fight. It's up to the management. But that was in a prior era. Now many are on the Heyman PBC pension plan. That's one fight every 12 to 15 months. And there's always looking for the, or they're always looking for the path of least resistance, which is like, who fights every 15 months? Two fights a year on HBO was a thing before Al started having a bigger hold on the, you know, an influence in it. Okay, one more and then we'll get out of here. Billy Joe Saunders facts. Okay, these are facts for Billy Joe. He is undefeated. He is the most dominant super middleweight WBO champ since Robert Stieglitz. He's the longest running super middleweight champion in years. There is no blueprint to beat him. He is unbeatable. He reduced fearsome puncher, because everyone was so afraid of Lemieux as far as a boxer. He reduced fearsome puncher to little more than a Pooh Bear, winning the fight on many scorecards, 104-120. Canelo will take more PEDs in vain attempt to prepare for him, but he will be destroyed. So he's the longest running WBO, most dominant WBO. Who has he beat at the WBO, though? Should Boots leave PBC before he becomes the next Maul? I generally worry that if he stays with PBC, he will waste many needed years of his career. PBC has turned into hype job factory. Now, when you say Maul, Maul's at 160 and all the talent is at the zone. Where's most of the talent, all the talent besides Crawford at his weight class, the PBC? And by the way, when he said, should he leave him? He's not with them right now. You know, he just headlined an A-side attraction in that. He on a PBC card. So I think he's going to sign with them, but he still has some management issues. But to say turn into a ball, it's just funny. Like, I said it before, the only way he's probably going to go to the zone is for Canelo or Golovkin. It's basic shit. I thought this was a good one. It's funny how some of y'all think Mel Charlo is somehow tougher than Maul. Only difference between them is weight class and opportunity. If the roles are reversed, I have no doubt Maul would be fighting the same guys at 154. Of course he would. Of course he would. Like I said, I'd watch the Andre fight and Charlo, no doubt. But if they wanted that, if Eddie Hearn wanted that fight so bad, if Andre wanted that fight so bad, they had a one-off and a multiple on Showtime to fight him. We're not even going to go deep into all the other fights he said no to or pulled out of Andre. But, you know, and I get it. If Charlo go over there for $5 or $6 million or whatever it was and beat him, that'd be cool if he did that too. But that's the part of the, you know, platforms that there's certain guys you got to keep on your platform unless it's Danny Jacobs. Was that middleweight? After the Quillen fight, they didn't have much for him. Where did he go? He fought Golovkin, then he fought. Now, by the time when he was with Jacobs, he wasn't really a PBC fighter anymore, but, you know, him and Conley, they did do that. They did. They went out and did that, but look at the money they got, and they fought Golovkin and Canelo. See that? That's the difference. He didn't fight Andre. He's not fighting Andre right now. He's had two easy fights. So anyway, that's about it for the show. I'm going to get out of here. Hope you enjoyed it. Guys, stay safe, especially people here locally. Enjoy the fights. Who knows? Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be a surprise weekend. I'll catch you next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival or the bullshit,